Welcome back to Forensic Mythology. This is Crystal.
I'm Trista.
And we're... But I'm going to be talking about fertility goddesses, and...
I'm going to be giving just a little overview
on boobs, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But before we do all that, I do want to give a shout out to a sponsor that sent us some awesome jewelry, and I'm going to post pictures of it and their website on our social media, but they're called The Elvira, and you can get 20% off of your order when you type in Forensic Myth as the discount code. And they have like a bunch of Satanist jewelry, which was kind of unexpected, but okay. And then a lot of mythology related stuff. So I got a Medusa necklace and like a Viking rune. Who am I? A Viking rune?
Take your time. It's okay.
And then what did you get?
I got a Baphomet necklace.
Okay. Is that the cat one?
Nope. It's a demon.
Okay. Don't listen to me.
You're thinking of the Egyptian god. Yeah. That's Bast. Wait, don't quote me on that. It's been a while since I've read any Percy Jackson books. not Percy Jackson. Shoot.
Okay, also, we joined a podcast network called Pod Z, and you can follow them on Instagram. And then we have also been on the charts in several other countries, which is very fun. And maybe it's because we make fun of Americans a lot, but in any case, I want to say thank you to all our listeners abroad, because it's been another unexpected thing to be on the charts in, like, Mexico and Hong Kong and Belgium and the Netherlands and Poland and France and Germany, like... And a bunch of others. And, you know, we're just not that popular in America. So, that's okay.
It's okay.
So, anyways, you get to go first with your boob part of the episode.
Okay, so I'm using a book here.
You just showed it to the computer.
Well, I talk with my hands, and it's a little... Okay, well, fine. I'll sit dead still. I won't move at all.
No, that was great. I love it.
Okay, it's called A History of the Breast by Marilyn Yalom. I highly recommend it. It's, like, one of my favorite books now. It's very interesting. But, it talks all about, as per the name suggests, how the breast has been seen and symbolized and considered all throughout history. And at the beginning of human history, breasts weren't sexualized, but they were more so, they were revered and seen as these great life givers. So, like, at the start of human history, there's no substitute for a woman's breast milk because pasteurized animal milk had not yet become safe because that only happened at, like, the start of the 19th century. So, to prehistoric peoples, the breast was a life giver and is what enabled children to grow up into adults. So it's very important to them. And quote, I got a little bit ahead of myself. Whoopsie daisies. It's very, and the breasts are very important to them, all right? And so, often they would make little statuettes or figures of,
like the Venus of Willendorf or whatever it's called.
Yeah. They'd make these little statuettes of fertility, mother, and nursing goddesses, and quote, their plump bodies may not conform to our present aesthetic standards, but to the inhabitants of a world where food sources were precarious at best, obesity was a blessing. So most of these statuettes were large.
They're very well-endowed women.
Very well-endowed, but because it symbolized prosperity and being able to take care of your child and having better quality of life because you weren't starving all the time.
Being able to just sustain life.
Yeah, so, quote, the womanly powers of procreation and lactation, end quote, were very important and celebrated. And so the importance of breasts couldn't be likened to the importance that, like, Jesus Christ has to the Christian religion. Like, that's the status that boobs had in prehistoric times. So, almost all of the clay idols from the
biblical
period.
Like, your life
depends
on it. Literally.
Literally. Where was I?
Sorry.
Quote, almost all of the clay idols from the biblical period are females, end quote. which is very dope. Good for them. And an interesting thing is that breasts didn't just represent, like, fertility goddesses or, like, women. It also could represent, like, power and, like, giving gifts to other people. Because for the Egyptian mother goddess Isis, who's associated with the milk-giving cow, she is likened to the throne of the pharaohs. Like, she's seen as the throne itself because, quote, the ascending throne... So that ascending the throne was to sit upon her lap and to suckle from her breasts was to receive the divine nourishment that would give the king the qualities of kingship. So, end quote. So here, it's like she's given her divine, godly breast milk and being like, well, yep, I'm giving you this, so now you can be a pharaoh.
If only it was that easy to just, like, bestow kingly wisdom. Just like, here, drink this milk.
Yeah, that would be pretty neat. And breasts aren't always associated with women. Well, most of the time they are associated with females, but on unique occasions they can be associated with men. Like, the strangest Egyptian breast configuration belongs to portraits of the male god of the Nile. Breasts are attached to his torso as a sign of fertility, for he was responsible for the annual overflowing of the Nile, which watered parched lands and irrigated crops, end quote. So, he had breasts attached to his torso as a sign of fertility.
Is this him?
No, that's actually, there's, you guys can't see it, obviously, losers. Sorry, that was mean. This figurine is,
That one makes me uncomfortable.
Okay, well, now I have to describe it. It's basically, it's a little guy, and he's very blocky, well, it's a little dude, I say that gender neutrally, little dude. How do I describe this? Maybe just, can you just take a picture of this?
Yeah, I'll post a picture.
Okay.
It's like a square...
Person. A square person with two little boobs very far apart and very high up.
Yeah.
And crossed arms, and there's a triangle down in the pelvic area, which it describes right here, if I can find it. When the human form was portrayed in the ancient world, breasts were usually a distinguished feature of the female. They were almost always clearly in evidence. Consider, for example, the image of the breasts in the two major civilizations that arose and flourished during the Bronze Age. During the Bronze Age, on the pre-Greek islands of, Crete and Cyclades. In the Cyclades, which form a circle around the Isle of Delos, female idols ranging from several inches to life size were carved from luminous white marble. Ooh. Many of these highly stylized figures had discreet, round, uncovered breasts, a pair of arms folded across the chest, a pair of legs, and sometimes a triangle to represent the pubis. Here, gender difference was summed up by two circles and a triangle, and women's mysteries were still considered sacred, end quote. So, that was just basically another example of, like, little statuettes. This one's a little different because the other ones were, like, very plump and rounded. And this guy right here is just a little...
Real blocky.
A little blocky, but I kind of like him a lot. I'd put her up in my room. I'd worship that.
You do have a sign that says, like, big titties or something like that.
I do, yeah. But, like, these little statuettes were placed, in... places of importance. And so, quote, statuettes of nursing mothers were placed in tombs and sanctuaries, probably as offerings to one of the various goddesses, for example, Gaia, Hera, Aphrodite, Demeter, Persephone, and even the virgin goddesses Artemis and Athena, end quote.
This is the coolest one I think I've ever seen.
That one? Yeah, that one's pretty cool.
Minoan.
That's a Minoan priestess.
Okay, sorry.
Now we're gonna have to post a picture of
well,
that.
Well, yeah, because that one is epic.
You keep throwing me off of like what I was gonna talk about. Okay. Well, now I am gonna talk about this one.
Okay.
So this one is a famous statue of Artemis called Beautiful Artemis, and it's covered with carvings of lions, flowers, bees, bulls, acorns, a lot of globes, presumably breasts, and grapes. And so,
it's a lot of breasts.
Yeah, so this statue has traditionally been seen as a symbol of, like, mammary abundance, but it's kind of it's kind of debated about whether the globes are breasts or something else. Like, some people think that they're eggs or even bull testicles, because there's an ancient rite of nailing bull testicles to cult statues, which I didn't know about before I read this book, like, 2 years ago, so that was nice to have information about. That's a useful
bit of knowledge.
Yeah, I use it in my everyday life.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And so, it also said that, they're clusters of large dates, which are symbols of fertility, which later came to be mistaken for multiple breasts, end quote. And so, to basically end...
I think that's probably accurate, because there's no nipples on anything.
Yeah, but there wasn't really nipples on anything else.
Yeah, but this one's very ornate and detailed. I feel like it's probably dates.
Or bull testicles.
Or bull testicles, yeah.
Yeah, so, I know I've been heavy on the quotes during my whole little ramble, but this is a quote I think really sums up what I am trying to get across. But, because women have breasts and the potential to provide milk for their young, females have been seen as closer to nature than their male counterparts. Indeed, as the very personification of nature, and assigned major responsibility for all the food that humans ingest on a daily basis, end quote. So, women were revered as these beings that were closer to nature because they gave life and they helped sustain life. Which is why they were very... What's the word?
Feral.
Feral?
Just kidding.
Oh, wait, now I forgot what I was saying. Oh, whatever. Okay. And then are you talking about Aphrodite?
Yeah.
Okay, so I highlighted this because if you're going to talk about her, I decided to bring her up a little bit. But Aphrodite became, like, a pinup figure. Mm-hmm. And during, like, 411 BCE, I believe. And the best way to, like, describe how she was looked at through male eyes would be, like, Marilyn Monroe as, like, a modern-day figure. And so, to end this, I want to tell a very interesting story about breasts. Because we started at the start, we were like, yeah, they're revered, and then they went into cults, and then it kind of... Just now I mentioned how then it kind of started to become the object of male desires, and then quickly skipping over, there's an interesting story that I want to talk about that's associated with breasts, because it is about a courtesan known as Phryne? Phryne?
Phryne? I don't know.
I don't know either, but I will try my best. So, she had been accused of one of her lovers by blasphemy, and then during her trial, they were basically making no progress, and she was going to be executed, as was the punishment. Wait. Not attorney. Her defender was, like, making no progress. He was like, okay, here's my last resort. So he brought her into, like, the middle of the room where everyone could see her, and then, like, undressed her, and then was like, could you possibly say that this person is doing wrong? Look at her boobs, and can you tell me that she's done wrong? And then they refrained from putting her to death.
That's a weird defense. But it's kind of like a Legally Blonde kind of thing.
Yeah, but they were like, dang, okay. And so they were like, all right, let's not sentence her to death.
She has perfect boobs.
Yeah, and then there was a law passed after that saying that no person that was being accused on trial would be allowed to show their private parts because they were afraid that the same thing would happen if women would be accused and they just started undressing. We're like, hey, you can't put me to death. Look at this. What a waste that would be. And so I thought...
Where was that at? That's kind of funny.
That was in, Greek?
Fourth century BCE.
I'm pretty sure it was in Greece.
Okay.
Yeah. So I thought that would be a nice little spot to end.
It's Random.
It was a little all over the place because I only had, like, 3 minutes to prepare.
You had more than that. You just forgot to
I forgot. Okay, listen. I forgot for 2 days, and then I had 2 minutes before this to get it all together.
You just threw all this boob knowledge together.
For 2 minutes, I'd say that was pretty good. Anyways, go ahead. It's your turn now.
Okay. But you can't look at what I'm reading. I
won't look at what you're reading.
Okay. So, back to the fertility goddess thing. In the past, we had briefly talked about Persephone for, I don't remember even what episode it was, but she's probably the most famous goddess related to spring and fertility. She's also goddess of the underworld, which is a very fun dichotomy. And just to be clear for everyone, that's in Greek mythology. And I'm just going to cover, like, all kinds of fertility goddesses all over the place. And then I also just barely scratched the surface because they're literally everywhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
And I also, I mean, today is St. Patrick's Day when we're recording.
It's true.
And I don't know why in the world it didn't occur to me to do a St. Patrick's episode. Yeah. But I guess I can do that next year.
Just dissing our Irish heritage or whatever.
Well, at least this is going to be something that comes out before Easter. It's like seasonally appropriate. Anyways, so the story goes for Persephone that Hades, one of the Greek gods, kidnapped her to be his wife and goddess of the underworld. And her mother, Demeter, who is also a goddess, was heartbroken, so the earth started to die in the fall. But in the spring, Persephone gets to come back and visit her mother. So everything starts to bloom again. And this story kind of is a pretty big bummer because I wish it actually was like, instead of Demeter just being really sad and the earth starts to die, I wish it was like Demeter, who was a goddess, stormed hell to get her daughter back and everyone went to therapy. But that wouldn't really help explain the changing of the seasons in quite the same way. So there's a lot of other examples of goddess mythology with almost the exact same storyline, like in other places around the world, really, because obviously they're watching this change in the earth happen right before their eyes every season. So
yeah,
it's a way that people were able to make sense of their natural surroundings. And some goddesses with similar stories to Persephone are Kostroma in Russian mythology, Arteo, a Swiss goddess, Proserpina, which is the Roman equivalent of Persephone, Freya, who we've already done an episode on, and the Siberian goddess known as Kaltes Ekwa is another example, and she is the moon.
I want to learn more about the Siberian and Russian goddesses.
I thought about, like, doing one on everything, and I was just like, this is too much, so. I mean,
I haven't heard a whole lot about Russian mythology in my life.
Well, Google Kostroma, and you could talk about it in a second. Anyways, okay. Another thing that's funny, which I just interrupted my own sentence here, but in talking about, like, this one that's the Siberian, which, you know, Siberia is also in Russia, but Kaltes Ekwa, she is the moon and dawn goddess, and pretty much all the fertility goddesses, like, when you go trace them back far enough in ancient times, they're all dawn goddesses, which I was like, weird. I don't know why, like,
strange.
I don't know why. I don't know why that's what struck me as weird. And then the other thing is, almost all of them are also associated with war. So it's like, oh, she's the goddess of beauty and sex and love and fertility and marriage and war.
Nice, you know. Got all your bases covered.
Yeah, she's just well-rounded. So anyway, back to the Siberian goddess I was talking about. She was the patron of childbirth, personified as a hare or a rabbit. She was greatly revered by the Ob-Ugric tribes, considered as the keeper of destinies and a gentle, motherly, wise woman capable of uncovering the mysteries of life. Another is Tawaret, the ancient Egyptian protective goddess of childbirth and fertility. Tawaret is certainly one of the most unique goddesses of the ancient world. She's displayed in the form of a large upright hippopotamus.
Oh.
This sounds real bad, so just picture this. A large upright hippopotamus with feline legs and a crocodile tail.
It's pretty dope.
Drooping female breasts. Oh. Her bestial and frightening form is a part of her protective role. Her ugliness was thought to repel demons.
Ugliness? And I think that's dope as hell. What?
And protect newborn children. It makes me think, I don't know why I have, like, the mind of an 8-year-old, but...
Oh, no.
This makes me
Where's
think
this going?
Nowhere bad. On, God, what's that movie? Madagascar 2? When she's... like, with her hippo friends.
Yeah.
It's like Moto
Moto. Oh, my God. You somehow managed to bring Moto Moto up at least once a week, and I don't know how you managed to fit it into every conversation.
I don't know, but it's just, it's so Xochiquetzal, also known as, a word I'm not going to say, but it's translated to maiden, was one of the major goddesses of the Aztec mythology and connected to fertility, beauty, childbirth, and female sexual power. She was a protector of women, prostitutes, young mothers, and pregnant women. Unlike human sacrifices that were a common part of Aztec worship, whatever her name is, was venerated in a more natural way with ceremonies involving flowers, butterflies, and animal masks. She was portrayed as a youthful and luscious woman. She was the mother of Quetzalcoatl, a major Aztec deity. Her attributes were desire, pleasure, wealth in excess, and beauty. Some scholars believe she was the patron of adultery as well, which I didn't know there was a patron of adultery. Like, okay. So.
All right.
And this is going to be your favorite one. Ziva, spelled the same way.
Is this what
Z-I-V-A,
the surprise was?
Yeah, this is your surprise. Was a Slavic fertility goddess. In Belarus, she was also considered an earth goddess, while in Serbia, she had a role as a protector of children and a bringer of life, and flower wreaths were offered to her. Her form was that of a beautiful woman.
Oh, I'm sure Ziva, my dog, would be...
She is a protector of children.
She is such true.
She won't leave them alone.
She loves kids. She gets way too excited.
Yeah. I mean, especially, like, babies, she just, like...
She loves them so much.
She has to be calm because she's trying to be careful, but she's, like, shaking. She's so excited.
She's such a dork. I
love her. Psycho. Anyways.
We should bring her in here, you know, as
we shouldn't. She's
a cameo.
Loudly. Anyway, so there are also many other fertility legends as well, but pretty much across the board, these are associated with springtime and, like, the rebirth of the earth itself. One of the most long-standing symbols of that is the rabbit or hare, presumably because of their ability to rapidly procreate, but they also appear as symbols of sexuality and desire in ancient art and literature. So it makes sense that a giant Easter bunny would be part of the celebration for our spring holidays, even if it's supposed to be a holiday celebrating Jesus being raised from the dead.
Yeah, not to take... Okay, wait, hold on. I don't want to offend anyone here. That's
ahead.
A great way to start a sentence.
I can cut it out if I need to.
Christians, they've stolen a lot of holidays and then rebranded it as their own.
I'm getting into that.
And they've been like, yeah, this was always ours. We've always done this.
Yeah. So, celebrations with eggs and rabbits predate Christianity, and just like with Christmas, the church just slapped some
new names. Waited 2 seconds, you would have gotten into it.
The church just slapped some new names on some rituals and called them Christian, especially if they were popular and couldn't realistically be banned.
Wait, so when they couldn't get rid of something, they're just like, all right, that's ours now.
Yeah.
That's hilarious, actually.
It's because it was spread over, I mean, it comes from the Roman Empire, which was spread out over, like, a million different little local religious sects of every sort.
Yeah.
So then when it got down to the local level, it was just kind of like, well, we're going to ban all these things and you have to worship this. But when it was really something that's deeply rooted and, like, everyone was super into it, like a fun holiday, people were going to celebrate it anyway. So they were like, nope, we're going to celebrate this, but it's because of Jesus.
Fair enough.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, anyways. We're going to steal your holiday.
So it also makes sense to have a celebration of somebody being resurrected from the dead during this time that was traditionally seen as a period of rebirth or renewal, where everything blooms again. So most of the celebrations surrounding Easter now come from folk traditions in England and Germany, like hunting for eggs, which were hidden by a giant rabbit. These rituals were related to the goddess Ostara, which I probably say wrong, it's fine, who is worshipped in parts of Germany and England. And some claim that the holiday Easter itself was named for her because the month of April was known as Ostara month. So the holiday was just actually called this after the time of year it was held, not for any religious purpose.
Okay.
There was, of course, a theory put forth in the 1850s by a Protestant minister in his anti-Catholic tract that...
Real quick, can you give me a tiny history lesson on what a Protestant is again?
They were...
I always get them mixed up with, like, 13 other different things.
They were the Christians that were also Christian, but fighting against the corruption of the Catholic Church, and okay. They kind of made their own, what's the word? Their own branch of Christianity.
There's too many branches.
There's a lot Hot of take, branches.
I get confused between all of them.
So, yeah. In his anti-Catholic tract,
You spelled Catholic wrong.
No, I didn't. Oh, Catholic. No, I didn't. Just because it's underlined? It's just not capitalized, that's why. You're not supposed to be reading
I'm sorry, this. I'm sorry.
Rude. So, anyways, this, like, tract that he put out was basically saying that Easter, the holiday, was associated with Ishtar, or Astarte, the ancient goddess of Nineveh in the Bible, which, indeed, she was a pretty cool goddess associated with love, sex, fertility, beauty, and war in very ancient Mesopotamia. But the only proof that he had of, like, that this word sounds similar to this word.
Yeah.
There's no proof of any association at all.
Oh.
So he was just like,
they kind of sound
Ishtar,
similar.
The ancient goddess of Nineveh, sounds kind of like Easter, the holiday that we celebrate now in, you know, America.
There must be a connection.
It's definitely based on that.
Yeah.
So,
causation versus correlation. Yeah. Wait, is that the...
That's not really what we're talking about. So, yeah. It was like, he just kind of, like, went off on a tirade. And, you know, that's definitely been refuted by people who actually study things like linguistic anthropology, which was the most traumatizing college class I had. And that's just kind of how loud preachers were at the time. And let's be honest, they probably mostly still are. So, just so much audacity, like, that word sounds like that word. I'm going to claim that the Queen of Hell is who started Easter and make sure children aren't exposed to the terrifying egg hunt rituals. It kind of sounds like Fox News. Anyway, some modern Christian spinoffs have also used this connection to make Easter sound really evil. Like, we dye eggs because back, like, Ishtar, worshippers used to sacrifice babies and dip eggs into their blood. But the problem is that there's nothing to base that on. Like, you can only find these things on weird evangelical blogs. There's also a very long history, which I'm not going to get too into, of accusing people that you don't agree with of killing babies, because that tends to rile people up. So, maybe someday I'll do an episode on QAnon, but someone will probably try to kill me if I did, because they're all batshit crazy.
Yeah, please let's not put a target on our back. I'd like to live a little longer.
Well, I already have a target on my back, because I'm a social worker, so obviously I'm kidnapping children for the elite.
Yeah, bathing in their blood.
Yeah. That's how I stay so young and beautiful.
Yep.
So, back to my original subject. We got way off.
Yeah.
Fertility goddesses are often morphed with mother goddesses, or at least there's a lot of crossover, because obviously one leads to the other in most cases. Another very famous one is Venus, the Roman goddess of love, sex, beauty, and fertility, and her Greek counterpart Aphrodite. Aphrodite was said to have been born from sea foam, specifically the foam that was created when Cronus chopped off Uranus's genitals and threw them into the sea, where they were carried over in the sea a long time, and a white foam arose around the immortal flesh, and with it grew a girl.
Awesome.
Like, I'm going to go ahead and say that's one of the strangest birth stories I've ever heard of.
There's not, like, one normal birth in, like...
in all of Greek mythology.
Yeah.
And it just... I get so stressed out when I read Greek mythology in particular, because there's no coherent storyline to anyone ever.
They're just doing what they want, you know?
But it's, like, even within them doing what they want, there's, like, 700 versions of what that is or who they're married to or... and everybody is sleeping with everybody, and you can't keep track of it. It's really stressful. It's like a soap opera, but worse.
You just can't live the Greek lifestyle.
I can't live the Greek life. So, after Aphrodite was born from the sea foam, she was washed up to shore in the presence of other gods. This account, which was written by Hesiod, is probably derived from the Song of Kumarabi, an ancient Hittite epic poem in which the god Kumarabi overthrows his father anew. I just included this because I was just like, what the fuck is happening? Anyways, anew, the god of the sky, and bites off his genitals, causing him to become pregnant and give birth to Anu's children, which include Ishtar and her brother Tishib, the Hittite storm god. So just in case you thought anything in this story could remotely make sense, like, there's that. Just to show you, it cannot. Nothing can make sense.
No.
So apparently, even, you know, the whole fertility thing, even if you're a guy and you bite off your... was it his dad, I said?
I think so. I don't know.
Yeah, his father. If you could bite off his genitals, suddenly you can also become pregnant with his children. So fertility was a scary world back then. Aphrodite is often portrayed naked. She was never a child. She just popped out of the sea foam as an adult. She was married to Hephaestus, but cheated on him.
Oh, he was the one who made cool machines, right?
I don't know.
Oh. Okay.
She cheated on him with various people, because Greek gods. And, she was a patron of sex workers and was also worshipped as a warrior goddess. She was celebrated at a few festivals throughout the year. Jesus Christ. Venus, the Roman counterpart, was a lot more grounded, we'll say. Like, she's pretty much the same as Aphrodite, but she was more venerated as, like, a mother figure, and more responsible-seeming. Like, she was seen a bit more... like, as a mother, basically.
Okay.
But she was associated with love, beauty, desire, sex, fertility, and victory, and more. Finally, there's the subject of little fertility statues, which I didn't know you were going to talk so much about. figurines that have been found in different styles all over the world. And one of the most famous is the Venus of Willendorf, which was discovered in Austria and is between 25,000 and 30,000 years old. So, I'll post a picture of that, but we'll just say she was very well endowed. And most of these figurines that were associated with a fertility or mother goddess have exaggerated sexual features. And this kind of ties into the concept of relics or amulets, which relics and amulets were also incredibly important for millennia in giving birth. I wrote my whole thesis on this, but basically people would be desperate, especially in the medieval period, to have a relic or a special amulet in the room when giving birth. And some midwives even had them to bring along on their rounds so people could hold them while they're giving birth. Or there were, like, special family heirlooms that were passed down to protect from illness and support an easy birth, to protect the baby and the mother, bless the mother with, like, a good milk output.
I don't know. Output to input ratio? What?
Because there was a really good chance that the mother was not going to make it out alive. I mean, that was like how most women died, was in childbirth for a lot of centuries. So beyond that, May Day is coming up, which is also known as Beltane and is celebrated as the kickoff to summer. And everyone should be wearing flower crowns and staying up till sunrise, which no one will ever find me doing because unfortunately I have a job and I'm a grumpy old lady. But these celebrations often center on a lot of trees or nature worship, honoring goddesses that bring warmth, and center on fertility rituals and dancing, gift-giving, bonfires, and a maypole. Ooh. It's one of the points in the year where the veil between worlds is considered to be the most thin, and you might see some ghosts or fairies. And just maybe if I can get my shit together, I'll do an episode on that before May. But this is by no means a promise. So, that is our
Easter episode that we recorded on St. Paddy's Day.
Yes. We're just all about holidays. Woo! And maybe I'll get one for Beltane if I can possibly have 5 seconds to breathe.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
So, anything else?
No.
Has there been any update on the great mailbox wars of 2024?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
I feel like this needs to be, like, a community announcement. Like, the sheer pandemonium that has occurred on the local Facebook page of, people not being able to check their mailbox and people screaming. But the funniest part is that everyone who's riled up in this situation has since come out. Like, both sides, people are screaming that everyone's a liberal Karen, but everyone who they're referring to and everyone who's saying it back, there's no liberals.
They're all conservatives, so they're all conservatives calling each other liberal Karens.
It's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Fighting over a mailbox.
Fighting over who can park close to the mailbox to check their mail. It's the weirdest thing I've ever witnessed, but
gotta love. Guys, got any small town drama? Email it in so I can read it.
Forensic mythology. Yeah.
Doesn't have anything to do with the podcast. I'm just nosy.
Especially if someone is being called a liberal Karen. Like, I want to hear it.
Hmm. Maybe if I get funny stories, I'll do a little Trista news segment. Absolutely no relation to the rest of the podcast. It'll just be me rambling, but
I was just dying about this the other night. I was laughing so hard because it was like hundreds of comments and it was the dumbest thing I've ever read and people were so upset. And then it's also just like how dystopian that, like, you know, there's all these babies being murdered every day in Palestine and yet we have people fighting over where to
mailbox,
park,
yeah,
to check their mail and calling everyone a liberal Karen. Anyways, thank you for listening. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok because I'm hip with the times.
Yeah.
Facebook and our website and email address, which I already said.
Yeah. So, Instagram. You already said that.
I think so. All right.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Adios.